So we're moving on to Q method.
Is that Q?
Like the letter Q. And I picked one little quote, and I forgot to write it down for my paper who it was that said it, but I think it was Brown, that Q is a science of subjectivity. Which I thought was really quite an interesting way to put it.
Oxymoron?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, okay, I like that. The origination of Q method is attributed to a British physicist and psychologist, which I thought was an interesting combination, William Stevenson, who presented it as an inversion of traditional factor analysis. So, and I thought, okay, I don't remember what factor analysis is exactly, but it's trying to find correlations. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know how to do it, but I know what it is. So this is achieved by statistically analyzing a population of viewpoints as opposed to a population of people. So it kind of inverts it entirely. The way they look at it is if everyone had an entirely original and unique outlook on a given question, this method couldn't work. We like to think that we do, but in the end, they really end up being sort of a bipolar spectrum, and opinions tend to cluster around different various, you know, little points, and those points then become perspectives. And usually this type of method is for answering that kind of question of what viewpoints people hold, what positions they have, and so you can kind of start from that point. How it works is there's a series of steps, and I read this really great paper, which I will pass on to everybody. It's actually on the web, you can download it, that kind of was done in 2005, and it went through for, I think it's out of NL, where will that be in?
New Zealand?
Could be in New Zealand, yeah, probably makes sense. For graduate students there who were trying to use it as a methodology and didn't know quite how to make it work, so they kind of went through, got all of the original sources, because apparently it's very hard to get a lot of them, mm-hmm. and figured out what it was. So this was quite easy to kind of put together then. It starts with the definition of a concourse. I've never heard the word. I think it's idiosyncratic to this particular thing. What a concourse is an entire grouping of anything that anybody could possibly have to say regarding a particular topic. So if we were to look at one particular issue, I don't know, this is often used in political science, so I'm going to look at a political one. If we were to look at what people's political ideologies are, there are only so many things that you can say. There's a finite number of opinions you can have. The concourse is the entire work of them.
Like my students using this technique, one did what makes a good... what is considered a good piano performance at grade 5 level? That was the question. And they're saying there would only be so many views on, there would be clusters of views on that, but there's not, it's not infinite. There would be enough consensus. And another one looked at, how would teachers evaluate a composition? That was another one.
Those are the examples of concourses?
Yeah. Or a question. That would be an example of question. That you would then, the concourse would be all the information out there that you could possibly accumulate that would tell you something about that.
In popular culture, in everything, absolutely everything that answers that question.
So for the student with the grade 5, she looked at the syllabus, right? She looked at questionnaires from teachers, gave their responses and pupils' opinions and examiners' opinions and any articles written about it and, you know, all that, anything in the media, web search, anything, yeah?
So after you've defined the concourse, the next step is the development of what's called a Q sample or a Q set, and that Q sample or Q set is a subset of the concourse, so you're trying to present a representative array of the various different opinions that people can hold. And that Q set is then put on cards, traditionally. Actually, a little deck of cards is given to the subjects. And on each of the cards is written one of these statements in the Q set, and they tend to be in the form of opinions. So it'll be one of them stated, and they'll have a number on it, which is completely random, just used for organization. And that's the Q sample. So then you have your set. It's quite a lot, usually. Like the studies that I was looking at were in the 40 to 52 kind of range of different opinions that would be placed on these cards.
40 to 60 cards, typically.
Yeah. And there's usually a lot greater number of cards often than there are participants in the study, which I thought was interesting. So once you've got this cue set, then you go about selecting your P set, which is your participants. And the thing I found really interesting is it's absolutely not random. You don't want it random. You want to select a spectrum so that you think you have sort of an idea of representative opinions, so that you'll actually have people that can fit into enough of them so you can get your spectrum. And so you've got your selection of your P set. The fourth step is then the Q sorting, and I thought this was fun. And apparently, like they wrote in the article that for this one study, people loved doing the study. They thought it was a lot of fun, whereas doing a survey, people don't like. So as a participant in the survey, you get this chart, and it has like basically all these little boxes on it, and then there's another row of boxes. So there's something like that, and you get your cards. And they have you read through all of these cards. Let's say there's 40. And you read through every one 50. You read through all of the cards, and then they ask you to separate them into three piles. Those you agree with, those you disagree with, and those that you're either undecided or don't know. And so once you've got these sorted into three piles, you then take your agree cards, and you read through however many of them there are, and you note the first, or like the two that you agree with the strongest. And you take those two out and you note them down. Then you would move with the remaining cards to the next three. Which three do you then feel the most strongly about? And you write those down next. And then the remaining ones go in the last column. Then you go to the other side and you go to disagree. And you take all your disagree and you find the two you disagree with the most. And they go on the other side. And you kind of go through it the same way until you get to the undecided. Which of the undecided do you agree with most? Which you disagree with most? And you put them in. And then they've got this whole chart with all these different numbers referencing which of these statements you agree with in most. And it's a very interesting way of ranking them. Because if you just told people, here's 40 things, rank them 1 to 40, you couldn't. But this gets people to divide it up and do it in a very systematic way, which I thought was really neat. And then they actually do, I have to look through this, because then it started getting into the statistics, which I wasn't.
Yeah, it's a very complicated form. But they have programs now. Computers.
That will do it for you.
Back
yeah.
in my day, and my poor PhD student's days, no programs. They had to do all the calculations by hand. And it's very, very complicated. It's not complicated to do the initial factor analysis, but then you have to transform the data using particular formulas.
Once it got into level 3 of the analysis, I kind of went, okay, you need to be a statistician.
But it does work beautifully, and it isn't that hard once you do it. You can. If you can do basic math, you can plug these numbers in and get the formula to work. But it creates these sorts.
Well, level 1 I thought was quite interesting to get, because the first calculation reveals a correlation matrix, which basically has your two polar sort of ends in your spectrum, and it starts to cluster people into the various different perspectives. So relative to each other, how do they feel about a certain topic? And you'll have a whole bunch of people clustering around one particular sort of opinion.
Or sorts. So their sorts were similar. Their key sorts were similar, and they cluster, right? Yeah.
And then the next level I still got was that the correlation matrix is then analyzed using a process factor that seeks to determine the number of natural clusters that there are. So you're trying to find out how many of them are close enough to one sort of topic that they actually can be. After that, the continuation of the analysis, I didn't get. But
you get to the point where your clusters are identified, can identify particular statements. Okay, the key is, and you can get down to as few as say 5 or 6 key statements and their ranking. So whether they were ranked really positively or really negatively. So you get that nice viewpoint of, here are the 5 key statements for people that clustered here, and they rank them, this one positive, this one negative, this one, always consistently 0. Okay, and then all the different people. So you're actually getting where their consensus of opinion more or less lies. And what's particularly, well, go on. Did they go to the, how they went to the interview stage after that? No?
They didn't, actually. But it made sense to me that you would then want to go through and actually find more information about it.
Yeah.
Just looked at the fact that it's not.
Usually, there's two things that can happen. One is most people interview the participant immediately after they do the key short, and they ask them, why did you put those here? Why did you put those here? And why are these here, the middle ones, the ones you weren't sure about? Why are you not sure? And people talk a lot, and they tape record that, and that gets transcribed. So that becomes the qualitative substance, if you like, to go along with the sort. So that once you've done the sort and you have your, you've identified what people are in what clusters, you go back to the transcript, and you can, and then you do any kind of detailed analysis that you want. You can pick a discursive, you can pick a phenomenological, whichever analysis that you want to work on to eliminate your interest area. You would be, you have all those interview transcripts. So it's nice. It really helps to fill in that real subjectivity angle of meaning and how meaning was construed or constructed. And then another possibility in addition to that would be then to take these back to the participant after you've done the key short and show them how their cluster came together and what key ideas were in it and how they respond to that.
Yeah, these ones didn't take it back to the interview. A lot of them they were talking too about doing a distance, mailing it to people and having them do the key short, and I thought that was kind of an interesting one. But and I think that Marty would get a lot of it because a lot of the ones that I was reading were to do with banking and to do with, like, there seems to be a great applicability for business.
Yeah. And political science people. That's really nice technique. In fact, it was developed by Stephen Brown, who is in business, or was in political science.
Political science, yeah.
I think he had some connection to
that. Yeah, to me it made sense for political ideology to find out where people study because there's just a clear spectrum.
No, it works. It really, really works well. It's freaky, but it does.
They finish up by saying that it's not, despite its longevity, like it's been around since, 1936, it's not well accepted, and that it's but they're still continuing to push for it because they're, staunch supporters of it. But I just thought,
It hasn't taken off at all, and there's lots of reasons, I think, for that. But there's a real rejection of anything new. It's problematic because it's unlike shifting paradigms. It's taking an existing paradigm and shifting within, and that's very hard for people to do. To shift from, especially people that know what factor analysis is all about, anything to do with factor analysis, they're like, what? Stupid. It just doesn't work with people who haven't got that kind of creative ability to shift. It's hard. But I went to a conference not too long ago on really staunch supporters of Eric Erickson's identity theory, which keeps coming. They're still doing it the old way and believing that the stages are all there. But these loved people came along and really wanted to push Q method as a way of investigating notions of identity and self and how. And if you think about it, especially with youth culture today, I mean, I was thinking one application, real world application you could see right away is why is it that certain adults have such often negative perceptions of youth today, of young people today, and how strong is that? Is that, a media portrayal that, adults feel negatively towards youth? Is it really the case? Is it parents with children who feel that less than those who don't? Is it different ages throughout the spectrum? And you could see that you could gather all kinds of media stuff and views about young people, put them on these cards, and people could sort their opinions, and you'd be able to look at clustering across lots of different things. So it's got lots of applications. Fiona, that was just an absolutely brilliant way of describing it, a very complicated process.
It was fun. I don't know that I could ever use it, but it was
fun. Well, it's really good. It's really clear. And it is, it's a lot of fun. I wish there was more time in research methods courses to actually try some of these things out and do them. Because that's how you really learn how to do research. Not by talking about it, but by doing it. Good.